Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of our eLaborate Topics podcast. We are in season four with over 185 episodes and listeners in 100 countries. We are so excited to bring you this show every single week. So everyone stop, pause, click subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. You can listen to the eLaborate Topics podcast again weekly on all your favorite podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, Google, Direct Impact, or even LabVine's platform called VineStream. So make sure that you support us, subscribe, and tell all of your friends. Before we get too deep into today's episode, I want to say thank you to our special guest that we have in the house today, Mr. Trevell Mason. Thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Trevell is a very talented laboratorian who works in a very special job for our nation's highest. Thank you for your service, sir. And we're going to talk all about public health and the public health arm and how that arm intersects with all of our clinical laboratory friends. But before we get too deep into it, I want Trevell to take some time and tell us a little bit about himself. So go ahead and let us know a little bit about you, Trevell.
Sure. And again, thank you. Thank you for having me. A long-time listener. I know you guys are several episodes in, to say the least, if not a couple hundred. So long-time listener here. So I do want to start out with the audience. I would love to take them on a little journey for them and just imagining, you know, there's an unknown or even a known outbreak that hits the U.S., the United States, and just stretches the healthcare infrastructure to the brink of collapse. And this persists for so long that for an extended time that laboratories are starting to stress more than they've been before, from the local level to the city level, onto the counties and states and regions and so on. So eventually across all of the U.S., labs are just stressed and struggling, and they no longer have the capacity or the capability to run because they are short-staffed of qualified medical laboratory scientists, meaning that doctors don't have the diagnoses or the lab results to provide that clinical care that patients rely on. So to paint a little bit of a morbid picture, bodies are starting to pile up, and maybe this is the scene from The Walking Dead, and growing public concern quickly escalates and teeters on panic. So who do you call when something like that happens, this type of public health emergency?
Ghostbusters? I'm scared.
Yes, exactly. My answer to you is you turn to your nation's United States Public Health Service Commission Corps. And that's what we're here for in those emergency. And I'll tell you more about that later. But I'm Lieutenant Commander Trevell Mason. I'm, again, with the United States Public Health Service Commission Corps. And in this capacity, I'm within our Medical Laboratory Scientist Professional Advisory Group, formerly the chair of the recruitment and retention of that professional advisory group, now the chair-elect for next year and leading our policy and procedures. So that's one hat. The other hat is, as you mentioned, my assignment as a active duty Public Health Service Commission Corps officer, my day-to-day work is within the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Global Health Center, on the Global Health Security team. That's a mouthful. I'll get into all of that and happy to be here again and look forward to this conversation.
Trevell, thank you for your service again. My goodness, what will we do without our public health partners? So tell us a little bit about your professional journey. Like, how did you get to this position? And what is it like being there? I have so many questions.
Sure. And so one thing I like to paint for you and hopefully the audience is the interoperability of the medical laboratory scientists within the Commission Corps. So I, like most of them, started off in a a NACLS program. Prior to that, you know, the four-year, well, actually it was a three-year, one internship program in the NACLS program, St. Augustine or in St. Vincent's in Jacksonville. From there, there was a gentleman in one of our lectures that went around the room, asked students what they looked forward to doing. And I was set on the Peace Corps at the time, but if Dr. Monahan hadn't set me out to refer me to the United States Public Health Commission Corps, his wife was a retired captain, one of the higher level senior officers in our service, similar to a colonel elsewhere, and introduced me to the Commission Corps. So from there, continued my education, graduated, and started work, put in an application, set it, forget it. I was working at the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, more of the reference laboratory there. And then I finally got the call that I got pushed through and, you know, went through the process. But as I was working the whole time in the reference lab. So having been accepted, I was introduced to two main choices to make when you come into the Commission Corps at that time, 10 years ago now, where I wanted to take my first assignment. And it was for medical laboratory scientists. We're going to start, you know, in the clinical lab bench work. Those opportunities starts with either within Indian Health Service, which services federally recognized tribes throughout the U.S., mainly on the West Coast, but there's tribal land throughout the U.S., as well as we have a need usually in the Bureau, the Federal Bureau of Prisons, the prison systems on the federal level, where we provide care for correctional health there. For me, what resonated was the cultural immersion and, you know, just being exposed to a different culture to provide service where it's needed the most. And for me, that was with the Indian Health Service. So I set out west, like Fido. I set out west to Arizona and the San Carlos Apache tribe there and started my time as a civilian and then converted to the public health service as our service. That's kind of the process. So that's where I started, in the lab, Mayo Clinic, onto Indian Health Service, small remote lab in San Carlos Apache tribe there. I'm painting a picture for you. You can see, you know, the free range horses roam outside your window, the Mount Turnbull, the big mountain of the tribe on the tribal land there, as you treat patients in this remote clinic and do what we've been taught to do as medical laboratory scientists for a population that really needs it, and immerse myself in that culture, in that, for 2 years. Just mind you, I didn't, you know, I don't want to overstate it, but for the two and a half years I was there, I fully involved in the community. If now's a good time, I can go to the next stop I made. Next stop was, I did realize that I wanted to be more external facing. The lab has its, I guess, how do I say it? It has opportunities within the lab, but there's also opportunities as you're a commission officer that you can explore a career going to the interoperability of a medical laboratory scientist within our service. So our assignments worked. I also moved we call it permanent change of station to the Food and Drug Administration as an investigator. Again, with the future in mind, eventually wanting to be in a country office and render public health on a bigger scale, I went with the food program as opposed to within FDA as a medical laboratory scientist. In our background, you can also do inspections or be in the biologics, which is usually like blood products and items like that. But being that I wanted more international exposure, I went with the food program. So I spent 4 years with the FDA on their emergency response team, foodborne outbreaks, and doing routine inspections on high-risk hazard food inspection, as well as eventually get into international inspection, foreign inspections on the food program. Where you might see a link with that as a background in lab, we do have what we call environmental sampling, to where we're going to its facilities and we take samples and those are analyzed in the lab. Slightly different than a clinical lab, but we also have folks that have a clinical, you know, medical laboratory scientist background working in FDA labs, as well as folks like me that decided to do the other arm. From then, I stayed with the FDA, but I went to, that was in California, went on to Maryland as a project regulatory health project officer within the Center for Tobacco Products. It's more of a process and project related role, but all with the plan of building some skills in there that I wasn't demonstrating in other capacities of my work, which led me to where I am now within the CDC Global Health Center, Global Health Security team.
Wow, my goodness, what the background. Goodness, you are extremely trained professional. And so I'm going back to many things, right? Because I'm thinking about all the outbreaks that we've read about over the years, you know, Jack in the Box or peanut butter, so like outbreaks, or what was it, spinach? You know, spinach, there's always a spinach like outbreak, or Bluebell ice cream and all these other outbreaks that you've had. Take us behind the scenes of some of these things. You started this episode with like not a scary story, but a very real story that, you know, we actually all just came out of this post-COVID pandemic. You started this podcast with like a scary story of, you know, what if there's this outbreak? What are you going to do? Who are you going to call? So take us behind the scenes as to your role either now or your role where you were with the FDA, and when these things happen globally or nationally, like where does your team fit in?
Perfect. Yeah. And so if I can too, as a public health service officer, we are active duty, and the folks on the audio can't see, I'm in a uniform. I'm a service dress and our service khaki uniform. And it looks very similar to the Navy. However, we have our own insignias and items that are associated with our uniform that distinguish us from the Navy and our other uniforms as well. But as an active duty officer, yes, we are active duty. We recognize and conduct ourselves in some of the same military courtesies, saluting, and our responsibility is 24/7. What separates us from the armed forces is our mission. For one, we're hyper focused on public health emergencies, medical emergency disasters. Some of those items you just mentioned, we are involved with. Whether it's in our day-to-day job, so when I was with the FDA, my day-to-day as an inspector, and also on the emergency response team, some of those outbreaks I was involved on boots on the ground for, not to name any particular firms, but if there was, California is known as the bread bowl, or not the bread bowl, the lettuce bowl of the U.S. So a lot of the green, leafy greens that you see and pre-washed and or not, either come from California, Arizona, and some Mexico. The ones in California in my region, I think at the time Arizona as well, before the reorg. But so some of those items we were on the ground for, E. coli and those type of leafy greens, or you know, the listeria you mentioned and the bluebell. Our office, a district office there, did take charge of those. And what happens on the day-to-day for that is, yes, however it is brought to our attention, whether it be we have systems in place that we'll test it from the retail and send it to our labs. Again, lab being implicated here. And that can trigger a response or follow up, or folks get sick, you know, if, you know, God willing, that doesn't happen, but we know that it does happen, right? Folks get sick and that triggers another thing through either complaint from them or through their hospital or in their labs, and some of the background and history, or what did you eat, where did you go? It could be triggered from the local public health department as well. So there's certain checks and balances in place that could trigger us going on the bigger scale. Where FDA comes in is usually when things go across the state line, where we get federal jurisdiction. So these big companies that send food across the U.S., that's where FDA will come in. And then that's where we would have what we call either trace back investigation of, you know, seeing what happened, find the root cause of the microorganism, and it's very intensive. You're putting on protection so you're not contaminating things. You're showing up to the facility almost saying, hey, we need to be in here. They can cooperate, or there can be a back and forth. But then you go into there and there's a follow-up to figure out what's going on. And depending on the company, it can be adversarial sometimes, or it can be, hey, we want to figure it out too. This is, you know, let's figure it out, figure this out together. So that's one end. On the other end, as an active duty, where I mentioned at the beginning, where, you know, the United States public health infrastructure or healthcare infrastructure is crumbling, right? That's a very, you know, a scenario that we often move away from, but we should keep that type of scenario in mind, because as we saw with COVID, those things happen. So we as public health service officers don't just go in when something like that happens right off the bat. It takes something on a large scale that maybe it's a, you know, state government, the governor says, hey, we can't handle this. We need some support. So they go to their process, their chain, to say, hey, who's able to help with this? And if it's something like COVID, we had medical laboratory officers deployed during COVID at a total of 159 times in a 2-year span. And I'm only counting 42 officers, medical laboratory scientist officers during that 2-year span that we were able to survey that deployed in 2 years, about four times in that 2-year span for, you know, 30 plus days to, and in different capacities. It can be in the medical laboratory capacity, which I did while I was deployed, and I also deployed as a safety officer in some of these bigger alternative care facilities, to where we had 1,000-bed facility that were, or at least the capacity to have 1,000-bed COVID positive patients, to implement safety precautions in that time. So again, that interoperability for medical laboratory scientists and public health service officers in general, we go in as our discipline as medical laboratory, or we go in and interchange our skills. And that's during COVID. During last year, our medical laboratory scientists did what we call temporary duty assignments. We reported over 350 days of deployments. And what we supported just in last year was, going back to our Indian Health Service agency that we have, that we, they have laboratories, they have a need for clinical medical laboratory scientists, and we help support them when they need. Most of that was in Arizona, Oklahoma, Oregon, and Washington. But again, the Indian Health Service, IHS, is throughout the U.S. So we stay busy, whether it's our day-to-day, it's all public health, or it's in the, when we are needed to deploy or temporary duty assignments, we stay busy and we stay engaged.
So you mentioned a couple of things that you guys do this very, very interesting work, but you also mentioned like checks and balances. And so I'm interested, you all sound like, I don't know if people out there watch that show, First 48. I love that show. I watch that show all the time. Y'all sound like the First 48 of the laboratory medicine profession, like the way you go in and do all of this investigative work. And I'm sure there are many checks and balances in place to keep us as the general public safe. And so what are some of those things that are behind the scenes that the layman person or the civilian like me may not know about that is happening at the public health or the CDC level to just keep all of us safe and protected from these national catastrophes and pandemics that you describe?
So a good question. To the point of checks and balances, there's a process, and I alluded to it a little bit, but you know, your local restaurant has a, you know, the buffet down the street, people got sick and, or, you know, whatever, got whatever norovirus or whatever thing they might've come down with. We're not responding to those, right? Those, we got local public health departments doing restaurants, and maybe on, you know, a secondary scale, it's maybe a manufacturing facility within the state. You're in Texas, right? Texas. They're some type of facility, but they only serve inside of Texas. So Texas can be like, oh, we've got this. We're we don't need any help. We have the resources. We have the manpower. We have. So we're not responding to that either. Where we would come in and make the distinction as the United States Public Health Commission Corps, where our officers come in, is that state government, or maybe on a regional level, but let's start at the state. That governor says, all right, we're stretched thin. We can't respond to this. People are still getting sick. We haven't contained it. What do we do? Where do we go? And it, depending on what it is, like if it's a foodborne outbreak, that FDA is going to handle that. If then if there's international, interstate, there's commerce, interstate commerce, there's products moving from state to state, FDA is going to handle that. if on a bigger, larger scale disaster, let's use Hurricane Sandy or Maria, some of those hurricanes that happened that maybe impacted on regional level or just the state level that impacted the, you know, hospitals and the ability to work, the folks that are in that state obviously are also, I want to say victims, but impacted, you know, your clinical workers that live in that state also have families. So are they going to be able to respond and take care of their family after their house got hit by a big natural disaster? So when it's stretched to that brink to where that state can't handle it or even beyond the state, there's a process to request for added assistance, support. And if it's public health related or medical related, we are one of the go-tos throughout the United States. And not to give you a litany of, just to give you the breadth of the officers we have, it's not just medical, you know, doctors, nurses, physical therapists, again, medical lab, because that's where I am and who I support. But nurse practitioners, physician assistants, you know, when you think of standing up a hospital or a medical unit, we have those professions as active duty officers ready to deploy and support these types of events and emergencies when it calls for it.
So with such a extensive infrastructure, what are some of the common challenges that you all face, particularly during or maybe even after COVID? What are some of the challenges that you can remember that you all faced that you had to kind of overcome?
We're human. I'll start with that. Some of the challenges were some of the same challenges that the infrastructure hospitals were facing as well. And I'll advocate for this, and hopefully this gets out too. We want more medical laboratory scientists to join us. We want more medical professionals to join the United States Public Health Service, qualified individuals that obviously meet our requirements. But to your point, we're human as well. So those numbers I stated earlier about, you know, COVID deployments and or TDYs, it impacted everybody, right? It impacted the folks at local hospitals and it impacted us. And because we're human as well, we're seeing the same, maybe on a different scale, but we're seeing some of the same things and experience some of the same things that other hospital personnel or public health officials are seeing. And so we have to, just like any other professional or profession, you know, have to figure out how to be resilient in those times. And I think we did a good job at that. But we will continue to improve. But again, just like the hospitals and the folks in there, we come in fit, ready, and ready to go. But, you know, sometimes you need to take a moment and take care of self-care so you can continue to do your job at the best. And when you're called to do it, you're fit for purpose.
Yeah, you have to make sure that you are taking care of you so you can take care of other people, right? That was all the lab profession through COVID. And so you said something really interesting, and I like how you kind of detailed how you're using your skills as a laboratorian to be versatile. It sounds like your job has you kind of pivoting a lot back and forth and for the lab. People who are listening, we like to give them practical tips. We always talk about how the opportunities in the laboratory field are vast and enormous because the skills that we learn are very versatile. And so for anybody who's listening who is currently in MLS or currently working in the laboratory field, I know you mentioned you have some experience working on workforce committees. I know you also work with the ASCP on their workforce committee and coalition, trying to positively impact having a pipeline of individuals through public health and the laboratory medicine profession. So what advice would you give to a laboratory professional listening right now who says, you know what, Travell's job sounds very interesting. I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to investigate. I want to be able to use my skills in all these different ways. I want to respond. I want to impact globally. I want to do all of these things. What advice would you give them?
Well, first I will say, come see me.
You have a lot of people at your front door. You have a lot of people at your front door.
If you're willing to do a little bit more to get more out of your career, I say this is the path for you. Obviously, I mentioned there are some requirements, so those are some steps, but that would be a first step. And I don't mind. I if you can't tell, there's enthusiasm behind my voice because I hope it comes across that I'm passionate about it. But yes, come see me. Secondly, broaden your skill set and get uncomfortable. I would say, I know, speaking to maybe the, if you were like me when you were first joining or decided to get into medical laboratory science as a profession, a bit introverted, right? Not forward leaning or, you know, maybe as outgoing as others can be. Not to say you have to be an extrovert, but be willing to be a little bit and step out of the lab. Now, I will say that there's also, you know, ability if you're just wanting to stay within the lab, there's growth there too. I just realized that for me, the biggest growth and where I wanted to take my career is going to require me to get a little bit uncomfortable out the lab and face to face with folks and still bring in that skill set foundation that I got through education and through the lab, bringing that on with me, but bringing some other tools along and gathering. So yeah, broaden your skills. I mentioned in some of my career, project management and program. Some of those were, all of those were intentional, knowing where I wanted to take my career. So a lot of that and getting lucky and networking, but being understanding that you may have to get a little uncomfortable, but yeah. I'll stop there.
I can hear the enthusiasm and passion in your voice when you speak about your job. And so tell me where that comes from. Like, what are your favorite aspects or favorite parts of you doing your job?
Great. I am passionate right now, and I will continue to be passionate about public health on a global scale too. But when I started, I'm realizing more and more in my current position that, man, as a laboratory professional, we don't get the recognition that we get. And we've heard that and we'll hear that, but I mean, seriously, in the doors that I'm hearing, in the rooms I'm hearing the need of laboratory capacity, laboratory capability, laboratory surveillance, lab. I don't see that reflected in the way we are, I don't want to say put on a pedestal, but way we're presented. There's such a need, there's such a honest. And again, I work mainly on the global scale. So it's important in other countries. It's just as important in those other countries to them as it is in the US. And we don't, maybe it's a shortfall of, you know, our introverted nature or whatever you want to say it, but we need to do a better job at that and elevating it us to where we're not just an afterthought in the conversation, and it should be in the forefront. The picture I painted at the beginning, where will we be as our national public health or national health security? Where would it be without the lab? There's no tracing of the diseases. How do you know where it's moving if you're not testing for it? How are you detecting it? How are you knowing where it's going? How do you know what it is without the lab? So I think that passion comes from, we need to do a better job at it, and it starts with me too. So I'll go with that. It starts with me.
So on a global impact, because you have that global presence, what is the landscape of the laboratory profession in other countries compared to the U.S.? Is it as dire need? Are they more visible, or is it all of us? We need just advocacy in general across the board.
Good question.
That's the only kind of questions I ask.
Yeah, nice. I like that. I'll say this on a global scale, and the reason why, let's start with where I am within CDC. The reason why CDC has a international footprint within the global center, a global health center, is we want to be able to stop something at its source before it impacts Americans. That's our goal. So we're in, you know, 60 plus country offices abroad. We're working with their ministries of health. We're working with other organizations and their government and public health with with the idea that, again, once it starts spreading, again, we saw it in COVID, once it starts spreading, it's going to impact us anyway. It's going to impact commerce, economy. It's going to have its impact on us. So being proactive over there and realizing some of the needs elsewhere can help us when it, and it sounds, but we, as a U.S. government, USG, that's why we're there, and to stop that threat there. So where that means is their assessments taken in these countries, sometimes internally, sometimes the World Health Organization will lead what they call a joint external evaluation. Basically, there's two types of assessments, one internally by the country, and then, you know, another voluntary one from the WHO and CDC is usually a part of it and whatnot. Those assessments reveal gaps in needs of those countries based on certain criteria. Lab is one of the areas, and there's particular specific points that, not just lab, because, you know, when you say lab, it's a broad term, you know, laboratory surveillance, there's laboratory modalities, or do they have the capacity, for one, and then are they able or the capability to actually pull those things off? Just having the stuff doesn't mean you're able to use it properly. You got to be capable, have the appropriate personnel. So laboratory capacity and capability and laboratory workforce development, those are all high ticket items abroad in other countries. Because again, if you see people getting sick, how do you know what it is? How do you detect it early enough? And then how do you figure out what it is? That's all lab, right? So those are usually the basic public health, really, basic healthcare infrastructure items that the countries that we work in need and seek to bolster. And then that's where technical expertise from the CDC comes in. Maybe it's also from other organizations. We work closely with the United States Agency of International Development, USAID, hand in hand on some of these things. But that's where the need is. And hear it more and more. And this is all public facing, the assessments that they do. I'm happy to share that. But you can go to the said country and see where these scores are, and then where they can improve it. And those laboratories are one of the big ticket items as well.
Travell, when you think back on your earlier self, and I want to speak again to those people who are listening to you and they're like, this sounds super interesting. Like, I feel like I could actually do this. And they're starting to get re-energized about what their future could be in laboratory medicine. It's kind of a two-part question, but what it sounds like to do this job, you have to be a critical thinker, you have to be a little bit curious, and you have to really be able to look at different pieces of data and put those pieces of the puzzle together to see what the big picture is, to kind of determine, is this an outbreak we need to get into, or is this something we need to investigate further, etc. So what would be some common characteristics of a person who would be successful working in your sector of public health? Like, what do I need to have intrinsically to be successful to be a part of your team? And then what does a typical day in the life of a person who works at the CDC look like?
Yeah. So to the first question, and knowing or thinking, I'm speaking to the audience that already has that background in the lab, went through the training and has a firm foundation in the sciences, at least the foundational sciences. What you need beyond that, and these are broad terms, and I hate when people give super broad terms, but they're broad for a reason. What you need beyond that are those people skills. Real though, people skills, soft skills, but how to work with people on a team. I mean, and for one, work with people on a team. For two, work with people on a team that you have no control over, you have no authority over, they want to come willing. How do you speak to their motivations to, all right, so-and-so, we need so-and-so on this team. What, I don't want to say what angle, but what will make it interesting enough to them that you know, because folks are busy. There's a lot of things going on. But what would bring them to the table and being able to speak to that? That's something I'm still learning. And maybe that's a learning thing that I will continue to grow in. But how to bring folks that you don't have any authority over or never even met, that, oh, this person would be the subject matter expert to have at this table to bring notoriety or bring, you know, other people to the table. How do you get them? Those aren't taught in laboratory medical programs, medical laboratory programs. But that is needed within, you know, when you work in between agencies. Like I said, we work with USAID, we work through the State Department a lot. That type of interactions are common, and being able to work with people. So I would say those skills will be super, like, we already expect to have that medical background, medical laboratory science background, but those other ones will make you stand out. And communication, meaning, can you write a thorough email? If you got to exchange 8 emails, maybe I didn't put all the right information in the first email that I should have. How do you, you know, it sounds simple, but really it saves people time. And if you're trying to get them on board, it's like anything else. If you don't capture them within the first couple of seconds or speak to or leaders, they need to know what you need right up the front, you know, right at the beginning, then, all right, or like, so what are you asking? I'm not going to read all this. So anyway, so that would be one. And to the day-to-day for me, I'm removed from the lab for the most part. Again, when I get deployed, or we also, as officers, we have medical laboratory sciences officers, we're required to maintain a level of competency. Obviously, we got to do the CAUs for our certifications, but beyond that, there's requirement to make sure our clinical skills are still current. So we'll do a certain amount of clinical hours to remain recurrent. And, you know, and some officers, such as myself, may do time in the hospital lab, define it as global health security being the set of capacities that countries need in order to be able to manage infectious disease outbreaks and other health threats effectively. Lab is in there, but that's not my day-to-day job. So in a lot of the partnership maintaining, partnership building, and relationship building with what we call the interagency, which is basically other folks within the U.S. United States government that have interest, or yeah, just call it interest in countries to help that country to build a better capacity. One of our partners, so they'll come to us, hey, you guys are really good at epidemiology, and we want to set up a program or help this country set up a program so they can be very good, so they can respond to their own outbreaks, and we don't have to get involved later down the line. Can you guys do that? Sure, this is what we're going to do. Boom, bam. There's a set of requirements that come with that, you know, reporting out, hey, how are we doing? How far along is this project? Where are you at? And, you know, those types of reporting. That's usually where I interface in between the folks that are doing it on the ground and the folks that we make commitments to do this work and accomplish what we said we were capable, and they're looking to us to be capable of doing. I'm kind of in the middle. And that's one arm. And then the other arm is how we can be better at those things, at the collaboration within the, you know, interagency, meaning working with the USAID. Hey, we're working in the same space in this country. Where can we synergize and be more impactful and move the needle on these laboratory capacity building active workforce development for the laboratory, work together? Who else do we need to bring to the table? And then make sure this is what the country wants as well. All that in a big pot, stir it up. All that takes a lot of, again, some of those soft skills and knowing where the gaps are and how folks can work together and collaborate on.
Geez, I did not know so much happens when they say we are behind the scenes. We are deep back there behind the scenes. Like, that's amazing, the scope of what public health is doing on a national level, at a global level, to keep all of us safe. That's I don't know what else to say besides amazing. That's great. As we wrap up, what is one piece of advice that you would give to a listener who's listening right now, who is feeling more energized because now they can hear that there are other opportunities besides what they're currently doing, but they're currainly feeling discouraged, uncertain about their career or their future. But talking, hearing this talk today, feeling more energized, what's one piece of advice that you would give to the listener out there right now?
The one piece of advice, I think you have the right background. You are the right, like your skills, you bring a lot to the table already. I'm speaking to our medical laboratory scientists. If you have those skills already, maybe there's a little bit more to add to it, but time is going to move on. So there's time to do that. Time is going to move regardless. So why not work on those as you do what you do daily? But you can do that in the meantime and still have an impact on a bigger scale. If they're struggling, I'm assuming the struggle could be trying to find that purpose, seeing the forest from the trees, where you fit in the grand scheme of things. I think I have my times where I struggle with that too, and seeing where your impact is. You're having impact now. Let's just say that first and foremost. Secondly, if you want a bigger impact, if you're looking for more and willing to do a little bit more, again, I'm open to having a conversation. I want more of our medical laboratory scientists to I know where we fit, having the background that I have, that we are good, a good fit and a great fit, and willing to add a little bit more, then you can continue to have an impact, or a bigger, if you're looking for a bigger scale impact and for something that's bigger than where you currently at, then that there's opportunity there. And I'm happy to make that connection. I go back from working three jobs and during college and not knowing if I was on the right path, and working at a nightclub as a glorified fancy dress bouncer, to, you know, kind of where I am now. But everything makes sense in the end, sticking to the path, as long as you're willing to look a little bit beyond your front door there, if a bigger impact is what you're looking for. And I'm happy to make that connection.
And speaking of making that connection, how can people reach out to you and connect with you?
Sure. I'm happy to give my email address. It won't be the work one. I've got enough emails that I haven't touched on the work one. So TMason 33559@gmail.com. Reach out to me through that email. Again, that's TMason, TMason 33559@gmail. Reach out to me. I'm happy to have these conversations with other folks. We do outreach to NACO programs. We have an effort to bring students, expose students at an early point, as I did, and which inspired me. So folks that are already in it, you got a leg up. So for sure, reach out to me, and I'm happy to see if this is the right fit, as well as usphs.gov, to see more that I wasn't able to illuminate during this call, or this time on here. But both of those, you can have a good background on where to start.
All right. Well, for the listeners who want to have a more in-depth conversation and a connection with Travail on this subject, and where can you fit in? Where can you get started? How can you navigate US.gov or all of the sites that you would go to apply for such jobs? You can email Travail. I'll put his contact information in the show notes. Thank you for coming on the show today. This was very informative, super impactful, always great to talk to other laboratories in the field, but super eye-opening and delightful to hear what our partners at the CDC are doing on a global level to impact our safety. Thank you to all our listeners who tuned in for today's podcast show. We love bringing you this types of content. If you have any ideas or would like to be on the show yourself, reach out to me. You can always connect with me. My social media tags and my information will also be in the show notes, because we love to connect. Again, share this episode out. Make sure that you subscribe. And until next week, please have a great one.
But let's
thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics. where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com. Stay tuned for another episode with information you can use to excel in your laboratory career.